Welcome to Political Rewind. It's great to have you all with us. If you're listening in real time, it is Friday. We're all getting set for a weekend. If you're listening in Metro Atlanta, you're getting soaked today. It's been raining nonstop out there. Jim Galloway, what is happening to the weather in this state?
Well, tomorrow and Sunday, it's not supposed to rain. That's it's the good part.
Yeah. The bad part is it's going to snow. What are we expecting this weekend, weatherman Jim?
Just lots of pollen.
Okay. That's Jim Galloway. You know that. He's the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He oversees the Political Insider blog, which posts stories throughout the day and evening at AJC.com. It is not supposed to snow this weekend.
Right, right. Okay. But it's supposed to be sunny and sunny.
That's good. We could use that. Sitting right across the table from Mr. Galloway, if you're watching us on Facebook Live, which you can do by going to the GPB news page on Facebook, is Sam Olens, the former Attorney General of the state of Georgia, the former longtime chairman of the Cobb County party of the Cobb County Commission, and now an attorney at the world's largest law firm, Denton's. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Good afternoon.
I'm looking forward to hearing. We're going to talk MARTA at some point, and given your position as former chair of Cobb County, I'm going to be interested in your take on what the vote in Gwinnett means in the long term to people up in Cobb County, and we'll get to that in a little while. Oh, excuse me. Also with us, Michael Thurman, the CEO of DeKalb County. Your credentials, we could spend 10 minutes. You're the former labor commissioner of the state of Georgia. You were the superintendent of schools in DeKalb County. You ran for U.S. Senate as a Democratic candidate in 2010. You started your career in politics, to the best of my knowledge, in the state legislature, representative in Athens. What else do you want me to add?
I'm a close and personal friend of Bill Knight. My truest claim to fame.
I do want to add one thing. You're an author. You just told me this morning that your first book,
A Story Untold, Black Men and Women in Athens History,
is about to be
republished for the third edition. Will be out in April. It's being published by the Athens Historical Society.
And you have a third book that you're preparing for publication, which is about?
James Oglethorpe, the father of Georgia, who is also, in my understanding, based on my research, the first abolitionist.
All right. Well, this is, you know, people don't know this, that Thurman is, in fact, a historian. So we'll look forward.
I've got an autographed copy of what? Freedom?
Freedom. Yep. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, we'll as you get closer, we'll talk as the republication, as the third edition of the first book, as you get set with the Oglethorpe book, we'll have you in. We'll do a show with you.
Well, thank you. Yep, politics is my day job, but I truly love research and writing. I'm a true nerd. Donna knows it.
That's what I was going to say. I think I have a copy, too. I'm sorry, Bill, you didn't know this. I feel like the rest of us did. But, yeah, he's quite an historian.
Oh, that's Donna Lowry. She, of course, she is currently the lawmakers correspondent at the state capitol and doing a great job down there.
Thank you.
But you also know Donna Lowry if you live in North Georgia from her years as the education reporter at 11 Alive. How many? You won like seven, eight Emmy Awards?
Seven. But, you know, the main thing is that I had a chance to spend 30 years at 11 Alive and talk a lot about education. So
Boy,
that was great.
Wow. That's, and 30 great. Years at 30 11 years. Alive feels like 50.
How'd you know?
All right. Enough fooling around. We should get down to business. Let's talk. Yesterday, the Senate looked at this, what they call the fetal heartbeat abortion bill. Donna, you were down there. Let me start by asking you to set the stage. Renee Unterman chaired the Science and Technology Committee where the bill was assigned, and the Capitol was mobbed with people on both sides of the issue. Yeah.
Absolutely. Very emotional. Each side, you could really see clearly the people who hung with the ladies who were in the costumes from The Handmaid's Tale book and show were all together. But you also had you had clergy. You had a lot of emotional people who were in favor of these bills. This started off in this Science and Technology Committee hearing, which was kind of interesting that it was there and not in Health and Human Services, but we understand that's because of Senator Unterman, who apparently for 15 years has pushed for something dealing with abortion. At any rate, so you the first person to testify was a 13-year-old girl who basically cried, had an emotional essay about against abortion, and that kind of set the tone for things for that one-hour session. And, of course, this is all after the Representative Seltzer presented the bill. Interesting there, I should back up and talk a little bit about that. We found out that now that women can now be, when you're pregnant, you can now ask for
child support.
Yeah, child support on that. So that was something different in the bill. On the other side, you had people like obstetricians, some nursing students and medical students who are totally against this and worry about the liability that might be involved if this goes through. And Senator Jen Jordan really gave them, really pushed some of the issues with Representative Seltzer on this issue.
Yeah, the Democratic senator from Atlanta Northern Environment.
Right. There are kind of two issues with this bill, both are kind of volatile here. There's the first, the heartbeat aspect, which is basically any abortion has to be performed before the 6-week mark, often
before the heartbeat is detected, right? Yeah, which is typically 6 weeks.
Which is almost usually before a woman even knows she is pregnant.
Right.
Okay. Then there is the fact that this bill is actually combined many aspects of kind of the right to life personhood effort to give full human. The full citizenship rights, I should say,
to a fetus,
to a fetus that's basic, that has a heartbeat.
Yeah, which includes, as Donna pointed out, they've added to the measure, which is interesting, this notion that a mother at six, once the heartbeat is detected, can in fact ask for child support from the father of the fetus.
And then there's a third aspect here.
Okay,
and that is the enforcement.
Right.
And that's been altered. In the original version written by Ed Setzler, all law enforcement agencies in the state would have had access to all to any health records kept by a physician or a hospital. That has been somewhat restricted, but not completely restricted in a rewrite of it. What's more, the new Senate version would give a prosecutor the right to pursue a woman who goes across state lines to pursue an abortion.
Right. So the new version says district attorneys only, and not everybody has access to those records, which was pretty scary for a lot of people.
Sam and Michael, there are so many threads to pick up here. Let me start with one of the first things that Donna mentioned, which is this bill ended up in a sort of a strange committee. You would have expected it to be in health, but Sam, it went to Renee Unterman in the Science and Technology Committee. Maybe for one reason, as Donna points out, Renee Unterman has been a longtime champion of the pro-life movement as a member of the legislature. But also you have to imagine that the senators liked the idea that a woman would chair a committee which is going to deal with an issue as sensitive as this for women.
Well, and the chair of health is a medical doctor, and I'm sure that was part of the process also. I personally thought the more interesting part was Stacey Abrams' comment recently, which is that the business community has been amazingly quiet about this legislation.
Which is true.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, Michael, that is interesting. I mean, the business community is quick to jump in on issues like RFRA, which they think may be harmful to the state's image out in the larger business world. There are an awful lot of people who think that passing one of the most restrictive abortion laws in the country could also do damage to the reputation of the state, to companies wanting to relocate in Georgia. But the business community has been silent on this.
Clearly, this is a highly emotional issue from a moral, religious perspective from both sides of women's right to choose. But the politics writ large, this is a crossing of the political Rubicon for the Republican Party. No way back from this. And for those moderate Republican leaders who sought to steer clear of these hot-button social issues, realizing that Georgia is a changing, evolving state, this, just on the politics of it, is not good news for the Republican Party in the state of Georgia. A Republican Party that suffered in the suburbs with educated white women, this does not bode well going forward. And I was looking and following, looking closely at Speaker Ralston. He was not happy with this. There was no joy in Muttville with this bill.
Well, but let's point out the Senate now has the bill because the House passed it.
Well, but he was in a position where he may not have been in a position to stop it. Give him credit. Previously, in previous sessions, he has been able to bottle it up and, you know, at least keep it in committee or keep it from being introduced. This changes the game politically in our state. And I submit and suggest that it's going to have long-term ramifications from a political perspective beyond the moral and religious issues.
Yeah, he was, Ralston was kind of, Governor Brian Kemp ditched his bill, which would not have affected the status quo, and endorsed 481, the heartbeat bill, then he was not in a position to stop that.
Donna, I'm interested in another thing that happened in this committee yesterday. Chairwoman Unterman did not take a vote to pass the bill out of committee. She said, I believe I'm right, that she wants to give people a chance to think about it over the weekend, that she's open to hearing other ideas that might be added as amendments to the bill. So here's what I find strange about that. This is certainly the most controversial bill that the legislature has taken up, I think, in many years, and it is certainly that this year. You would think, with all of the lobbying going on, citizen lobbyists, professional lobbyists, you'd think you'd want to get this thing rammed through as fast as possible to take the pressure off your members, and yet we're going to have another delay in this. What's going on there?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking that, you know, first of all, remember, this has been all in 1 week. This was from Thursday to Thursday that we saw it introduced on crossover day, came in really quickly, and there was a lot of talk about people not getting the chance to really talk about this. So they got their chance. I think the feeling is if this rams through too quickly, that they will really face more criticism. And I think there are some things, I frankly got the impression, that she wants to add to this bill that she hasn't had a chance to include.
What's the current schedule, you think?
I'm thinking another
committee on Tuesday?
I'm thinking there's a possibility of that. I don't know if she didn't come right out and say that. I don't think so, that she said she would do that. But
you know, Sam, I remember, I compared this in a way to the flag vote that Governor Barnes introduced during his tenure as governor. And there was this effort. He introduced it in the House, and he wanted to get it into the Senate's hands immediately. They had hoped they'd have a full Senate vote within days after the House had passed it because of just this problem, all of the pressure that builds up. And again, why wouldn't you want to do that with this bill, too, if you're really trying to manage the bill correctly?
You know, I understand your concern. The votes are there.
Yeah.
My concern is really more what Michael said. This is going to be the discussion in the next in the Senate election, in all the 20 elections. This bill is going to be the discussion.
You saw Carol in Bordeaux hold a press conference. A congressional candidate in the 7th district. Come to the Capitol to hold a press conference to denounce this state bill.
Michael?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone has spoken, I think, very clearly. And the thinkers, the strategists, are processing what this means. And part of the delay, I think, is for people, whether it's the business leaders and others, to understand the implications of it, the political, the economic, and where should we position Georgia? I think the Attorney General is right. The votes are there, but this legislature may not be representative of the state of Georgia at this point. and we are seeing that transform 15 votes in the House, this could be the bill that shifts power back to Democrats in the Georgia General Assembly. And that's what's being processed. And there is a school of thought also, though, from the right, is that unless we get it done now, we may never get another chance.
Yeah. Then there's the national spotlight right now that we're already under as Georgia because of the controversial election. So then here's something else major that Georgia's dealing with. Maybe I'm thinking there's a feeling, let's slow it down a little bit and figure out where we want to go on this.
Yeah, it's kind of unusual here. If you're a religious conservative and you're allied with Trump, you're watching the U.S. Supreme Court turn very much in your favor, and you're anticipating what you think might be the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and yet then you come back here down to Atlanta and you feel the ground slipping from under you.
So let me give a slightly different area legally. You're watching the U.S. Supreme Court decline to take many controversial cases where you would think the conservatives may now have the 5 votes. Chief Justice Roberts is encouraging delay on many of these cases and letting the circuit court decision stand. You also have Chief Justice Roberts siding with the liberals more and more, trying to be more concerned about the credibility of the Supreme Court itself. So I would not take the position that you know what the Supreme Court would do. I think the whole issue on a bill like this may be which 3-judge panel on the 11th Circuit hears it, and you won't hear that for a long time.
Sam is absolutely right regarding Chief Justice Roberts. He's been a breath of fresh air in terms of his ability to moderate, to be objective so far. And he's, I think, taking a very concerted effort not to be politicized or not to engage in the hardline partisanship that defines national politics right now.
Well, yeah, look, I am no expert on observer of the U.S. Supreme Court. As a journalist, I've never spent any time really covering them. Nevertheless, I don't think it's a stretch to suggest that Justice Roberts has moved a little bit more toward the center, in part because of his feeling so terribly offended, as he said publicly, at the way President Trump has tried to politicize the justice system. And it does feel as though Roberts may have moved a little toward the center because of just what Sam Olin said in his way, which is, we've got to stop the politicization of the court.
Yeah, he's acting on behalf of the institution in that case.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So again, let me just a couple of more items here. Jim, why hasn't the business community jumped in? I raised the question. There doesn't seem to be an answer right now. This is, why does Delta Airlines, Coca-Cola, Georgia Power, why do these companies not want to jump in on this?
Okay, well, you have to remember, I mean, we used religious liberty as an example. I mean, that's been a 6-year fight? And kind of the alliances and pathways and the threats are already out there sitting right there. In terms of abortion, anti-abortion bills, it's kind of like that pot with the frog in it. You just turn up the heat a little bit at a time, and a little bit at a time, and it hasn't been a woman's access to abortion hasn't been a business community issue yet. But to go back to what Sam had said. What Abrams was saying was Stacey Abrams was saying, look, given this bill, you're going to have women in corporate life who are going to say, no, I don't want this. I don't want our headquarters moved to Atlanta because I won't be able to govern my own body. That's a new fear, and it's going to take some time to penetrate, I think.
All right.
We're missing the leadership of Governor Nathan Deal at this point in time because he was a moderating force against extreme social issues that were highly controversial and possibly had a negative impact on the business environment. And he's not there now. And you can see the nature of the legislation is being introduced and promoted.
All right, before we leave this subject, we did have a Twitter question that I really would love to have somebody answer. Donna, maybe you can answer it for us. Sam Halverson, who tweets as Sam I Am Too, says, what are the repercussions if a woman does get an abortion after 6 weeks in this bill? Is the woman arrested or prosecuted? The doctor, you mentioned the prosecutor can pursue the woman across state lines. Who is the offender in this legislation?
Well, there were speakers who brought up all of those issues last night. The obstetricians who spoke, the medical students, all worry about the fact that there are some liability there for malpractice. As if you have a miscarriage, for instance, this whole idea that you'd be able to count the fetus in taxes, say that a baby is conceived in 2018 and you'd miscarry in 2019, but you'd be able to put them on their in your taxes. And the idea that obstetricians in this state are rare, are scarce, especially in the rural areas. And only about half of the counties in this state have obstetricians. Yeah. So there's the fear about that. So there's a lot of fear about the unknown.
Well, we talked about law enforcement having access to records, but I think the intention of this bill is that it would be mostly self-enforcing. It would not criminalize the mother for seeking an abortion, but it would allow her, after an abortion, to pursue damages against any clinician that performed one.
All right.
Let's just one last comment.
No, go ahead.
So you had the issue in New York, the issue in Virginia, where the Republicans were feeling really good because these potential bills that would permit a child born alive to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
And now the whole discussion changes. Huge earth movement from favoring Republicans to concerning suburban mothers.
Squandering an opportunity.
All right. Well, we'll watch in the next days. And Don, as you said, we're not sure when Renee Unterman is going to bring the committee together again to actually vote. We assume there will be a vote on this. It would be interesting to see if anybody's rethinking this over the weekend. But we assume they're going to move ahead in committee and move it to the floor at some point.
Yeah, and a vote in the committee, move to the floor, and then when will that be? Then the big fear is that Sonny dies. What will that day be like?
Yeah,
it ends up then.
Yeah, what day are we going to be in on Monday? They're off today.
They're off on Monday. You're talking about next week.
Yeah.
They're in on Monday, Thursday, and Friday.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what day they're in the session. The session is scheduled in now on April 2nd, so they've got essentially 2 full weeks.
Right.
This could go to sine die, couldn't it?
Who knows?
All right, let's do this. We got a lot more to talk about. First, in terms of the legislature, and then some things going on up in Gwinnett County and in Washington. We'll do that after we take our first break. This is Political Rewind.
You know, selling a car can be a hassle, but donating it is a whole different story. Let us take it off your hands or off your driveway and turn it into public radio and maybe even a tax deduction. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace, and here is how to donate.
Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
This is Ari Shapiro, host of All Things Considered. By the time you turn on our show in the afternoon, you've probably seen headlines, maybe you've read a tweet, you might have heard a newscast. So we want to tell you more than just what's happening. We want to give you reasons why things are happening, the context around what's happening. We want to tell you something that will stick with you while you're driving home or making dinner. All Things Considered. Listen every afternoon.
Join us for All Things Considered this afternoon from 4 to 7 here on GPB and online at gpbnews.org.
We're back in the studio with us, DeKalb County CEO Michael Thurmond, former State Attorney General Sam Olens. Aren't you, by the way, if you were still Attorney General and this law is signed by the governor, the Attorney General's office would really get deeply engaged in the enforcement of this, I assume, yes?
Yeah, you would assume there'd be an immediate lawsuit to challenge the constitutionality.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And it's the role of the Attorney General to defend it.
Okay. Well, perhaps a reason Sam Olens is glad he's gone back into the private practice of law. Who knows? I shouldn't speak for him, but I've got to wonder. Donna Lowry, the legislative reporter for GPB's The Lawmakers, which you see on the air every night. on the GPB television network every night that the legislature is in session, that is, and Jim Galloway. It's Monday. I mean, it's Friday, so we're glad you're here with us as well. Jim, what's happening with Hartsfield Airport? We've already seen it pass one body. Now it's gone on to the other, but it passed the Senate.
Right.
David Ralston has made it pretty clear he's not interested until somebody comes up with a pretty good reason why the state should take control. He doesn't think it's a great idea.
And even more interesting, I think Jan Jones, the Speaker Pro Tem, has said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of that will make people pause, I think.
Mayor Bottoms held her State of the City speech yesterday, and although she said to a few interviewers she thinks this is like the state going to war with the city, it was the first time in a big public setting, I think, that she's really expressed her feelings that the city's done a good job running the airport.
Right, right. She says, how do you best the best? And, you know, you have a lot of people who could take issue with the city of Atlanta's history when it comes to contract procurements. You know, its performance numbers are there.
So, Donna, do we expect it's even going to get – well, it's in a committee, of course, in the House. Is it going to get out of committee? Is Ralston going to keep it from even coming it through a committee to rules and to the floor?
It appears that way right now. When it first came out, we thought that it was going to move a lot faster than it has. We're also hearing that Kemp may not be interested in this either. So, and she has been quiet, and maybe that's why she's been quieter on this than you might expect, because – maybe stirring it up too much will cause a problem. So she's spoken, you know, she's talked to a few of us here at GPB, but hasn't really been out here that much on out there that much on
it. Yeah, one thing you don't want, if you're the city of Atlanta, you don't want to see this bill kind of used as a hostage to some other issue in order to kind of force a vote. And right now, you know, the only issue I could think of that would have been like that might have been the voting machine vote, but that's gone and passed and cleared now.
Yep, that's gone.
I don't see any trade that can be made where you can promise not to move this bill if you vote my way this way.
Mike Thurmond, how do you assess, we have a brand new governor, Nathan Deal as governor and previous governors to him, were often willing to jump in pretty quickly to say where they stood on some of the more controversial pieces of legislation in the session. It's interesting that Governor Kemp has chosen to not talk about his feelings about the Hartsfield Airport case. He does seem to believe, to an extent, in giving the legislature an opportunity to look at things without immediate intervention. Is that a good thing, or does that trouble you?
Well, no. First of all, though, it's the city of Atlanta, but it's really Delta.
Yeah.
You don't underestimate the influence of the largest private employer in Georgia, if not the Southeast. They have a tremendous amount of capital that they can invest at any point in time. So it's the city of Atlanta, but it's also Delta saying no, and no emphatically. And who wants to challenge that in any fundamental, any significant way? As for Governor Kemp, I think he's feeling his way and trying to understand the issues. And the thing about Governor Kemp, he closes. You know, if you think back through the election, when we all wondered where he was or what he was doing, lagging in the polls, one of the things, one of his traits, if you follow him closely, he closes in the end. He makes you wonder early, but that's his strength, for better or worse. And maybe he'll play out how he ministers the state in that same way that he actually campaigned.
Sam, the effort for a state takeover of Hartsfield by Republicans in the legislature has been going on for many years. And it was one of your Cobb County residents, Earl Earhart, who really pushed hard for it during his career in the legislature. Is this put an end to it once and for all if, in fact, the speaker decides not to bring it up?
Look, if there's an indictment relating to the airport, nothing stops the bill. Because at that point, the FAA will agree to the change. If there isn't an indictment related to the airport, it's hard to imagine what gives it the juice for the FAA to support a change.
Okay, but we're not anticipating. I should be more clear. This session, you still think it has a chance if, in fact, B.J. Pack, the prosecutor, the federal prosecutor in this case, U.S. attorney, comes up with one name of someone who has directly been given a bribe to run an airport concession or something.
Well, I think it would take an indictment.
Okay. All right.
Well, the point is, if you really read the legislation, and the subtext of the legislation is, we won't do it if you negotiate with us. That takes a lot of the impetus away. You know, it really does. Is it a bill to be passed and adopted, signed into law? Or is this an effort to force the city of Atlanta, i.e. Mayor Bottoms, to a negotiating table?
Okay, but so you're right. But I sit here today agreeing with the speaker, et cetera. There's no reason for the bill.
Right.
You know, there hasn't been shown the proof for the state to be doing a takeover. If there's an indictment, that's a different set of facts. But short of that, I agree. The language in the bill, I think, is very concerning. Negotiate with us in lieu of. But I don't think that, frankly, bodes well in the House.
No. And one of the better columns I read on this was, all right, who has the clean hands? I don't remember the name of the gentleman who wrote that column.
No, I have no idea either.
That would have been Jim Galloway.
But, you know, just putting it just a tight bow and just capsulizing what the issue is about, how is the state in a better position to administer than the city of Atlanta or any other jurisdiction? You have good people and bad people. You have ethical folk. And then in every government, you will have people who do unethical, illegal, immoral thing.
So let's just clarify what Sam Olin's, just in case listeners out there are saying this, wait a minute, we did just have an indictment, another indictment in the bribery cases that have been, the U.S. attorney has been trying to make and has made against city contractors. That one, Jim, that came out just the day before the first vote in the Senate on this, was a contractor who, for the most part, was not involved in airport. He certainly wasn't involved in the concession business, right? Donna, you're nodding.
That's right. He wasn't involved in it. So there's another federal indictment that's out there that could come down that you were talking about there. And so that's what we're waiting to see. And whether that comes in the next, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks before the legislative session ends, it was still to be seen.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Nope, that's it.
We pointed out on the show the other day that BJ Pack handed out down that indictment in a very public way, as he's been doing with a news conference. Mm-hmm. And then a couple days later said, I didn't realize that the legislature was debating the airport bill.
well, so saith the member.
All right. Donna, we just talked about it briefly, and really, it's a done deal. The bill that would establish a new voting system in Georgia has now gone to the governor. It's passed both bodies. There had to be an agreement. The Senate version was somewhat different than the House version. The House agreed to the changes the Senate made, and it's on Brian Kemp's desk, and there's no reason to think he won't sign it.
And no reason at all. I think he's ready to do it. It was a heavy week, and mostly focused on that. You know, Monday in the House, Wednesday in the Senate, Thursday back in the House. A lot of debate, a lot of emotions, a lot of people feeling that this was pushed through also. But I think everybody felt it was inevitable.
And hours before the Senate vote, the Secretary of State's office finally released some cost estimates made by all the vendors that were filed in August.
Yeah, we saw Stephen Fowler, who's covering the legislature for GPB Radio, put them up on the GPB News website. But those are still rough estimates, Mike Thurman. We don't have, one of the arguments here, of course, has been opponents of the computerized system that they've voted to put in place say it's going to be far more expensive than hand-marked ballots. And when the actual request for proposal, the more specific and detailed proposals come in, we'll really get a sense of that.
Oh, absolutely. And just thinking about it, this reminds me so much of my last 2-3 years in the Georgia House of Representatives when the Democrats were beginning to lose control. And I see Republican legislators making the same mistakes we made. And people are paying attention, but they can't imagine how much attention is being paid. The margin of being in the majority or not is so small, and it's almost as if they are just oblivious to the political realities of Georgia right now.
You think the public is opposed to these computerized voting machines?
Well, I think they're looking at the process. Who is getting the contract? Was it fair? Was it open? Those are the things that are weighing on the process. Is what Jim just talked about.
There's a provision in the bill that allows the expenditure of $150 million, $100 million for hardware, $50 million for training. What that bill doesn't contain is, and was alluded to in those documents that we just mentioned, was that with those touchscreen voting machines, there's going to be an annual licensing and maintenance fee by the same company from wherever that's purchased, and in one estimate by one vendor, which has kind of the whole position in this bidding process, it comes to about $5.7 million a year.
And there's a heightened sensibility and a sensitivity around voting right now at all levels. Hey, we were just sued this week, we being DeKalb County and other metro counties, and I can't discuss
the ACLU.
By the ACLU. I love Miss Andrea Young, but
who is running ACLU
and I still
in Georgia,
love her, even though she sued me, but that's okay. but that's just a reality, and you have to really, really be careful because people are paying attention.
Let me just, to clarify it so our listeners aren't in the dark, the lawsuit ACLU filed contends that the four largest counties in Georgia, which includes yours, DeKalb, Fulton, Cobb, Gwinnett, are ill-equipped to handle large numbers of voters coming out to the polls. It accounts for long, long lines at the polls in the 2018 elections, and that ACLU contends can suppress, lead to voters being unable to make their vote, to cast their ballot. And we'll see what happens with that suit. It is in federal court right now,
which I can't discuss in any detail, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, does he call on you to represent him in this case, Owens?
I think he wants to offer a check. I mean, you know, I don't do that for free.
Sam,
I thought you were on retainer.
Yeah, Sam. What?
We are, but not in regard to that litigation.
Sam. Republicans, when Democrats allege that these computer machines that are going to be now purchased for the state are not invulnerable to cyber hacking and that sort of thing, the first thing that mostly Republicans say is, wait a minute, Kathy Cox, a Democratic Secretary of State back in the early 2000s, she was the one who got us computerized machines in the first place. This isn't partisan.
You know, I think the opposition to the voting bill have done a really poor job of outlining the risk. It's almost become this: the sky is falling, the sky is falling. What I haven't seen is a leading presentation that outlines the problem. And for some of us old enough, we do recall Florida, and we do recall Chad's. And the concept that paper ballots provide no problems, I'm sorry, that day's passed.
Well, we're going to see the bill signed into law. It'll be interesting because this begins a process that is going to first we'll get the RFPs and see who they bring in to buy the machines from. Then there's a training period, Donna, where the county election people are going to need to be trained on these machines. And then voters themselves are going to have to go through a process where they'll watch YouTube videos or whatever, commercials on TV. Here we'll talk about it on GPB radio. But this is the beginning of a process that will take us right up to the first election cycle, in the first elections in the 2020 cycle.
In 2020. And all I can think of are the wonderful little poll workers, the men and women in my precinct, who will be trying to figure out how this all works. Bless their hearts. That this is something new that we'll have to, you know, it's going to be growing pains as we go through all of this. And then the other thing I wanted to point out is, let's not forget there's still the feds are still looking at us, that the Committee on Oversight and Reform sent a letter to Governor Kemp this week asking for a lot of information from this past November. So we still have that too. That's making people a little nervous about what's going on.
Yeah. All right. We'll watch how that develops. Let's move on. Jim, there was an interesting announcement from the Lieutenant Governor, Jeff Duncan, this week, newly elected as Lieutenant Governor. He mentioned it on your show last night, Donna. Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan says there ought to be term limits for the Lieutenant Governor. Let's listen to just a little of what he said and then talk about it.
I spent 2 years on the campaign trail really talking about feeling like there was an opportunity to put a term limit on the office of Lieutenant Governor. It's a role that I believe sits in the executive branch, and I felt like it should mirror the rules and timing of the governor's term limits of two consecutive terms. Constitutional amendments are typically a two-year process. The bill will be introduced this year. Hopefully it will pass through the General Assembly next year, and then ultimately the voters will have an opportunity to vote on it as to whether or not they believe it's a good idea. I hope they do.
Jeff Duncan talking to Scott Slade, the host of Lawmakers, last night. Sam, Michael, what do you make of this?
I support it. Frankly, I support term limits for every race. Local government, every race. I think that the people that are there too long cause problems because they get too comfortable in their positions. So as a general statement, I absolutely agree with the Lieutenant Governor.
You had Zell do 16 years. You had Casey Cagle do 12 in that spot.
I would think that it, at a minimum, it should include all constitutional offices.
Ooh, there's an idea right there.
Yeah, that's really Lieutenant Governor's on the right track. Didn't go far enough.
Secretary of State, Labor Commissioner, all the way down.
The way down, should have a two-year term limit at the state level for constitutional officers.
You don't mean a two-year limit.
You mean a two-term limit.
Was it you? There was an item in the Insider today. Did you get the call from a former legislator who pointed out?
Yeah. And it got complicated. It got complicated. I put that item about Jeff Duncan asking for a cap on servitude by lieutenant governors. I got a call from Wendell Willard.
That's the
Sandy Springs House member. He's retired now. He retired last year, and he says, "Well, don't you remember that when Zell first ran in 1974, he was advocating an end to that, putting an end to the
no term limits, just let's not have
because
lieutenant
remember,
governor."
I mean, this is a relatively new position. Yeah. It's a post World War II position. Okay, so then I put that up, and then I got an immediate note from Keith Mason. Yeah. Who is chief of staff for Zell, and he said that Mr. Willard was misremembering things, that Zell just wanted to stop the catfight that had existed for 4 years before between Jimmy Carter and Lester Maddox. Jimmy Carter is governor, Lester Maddox is lieutenant governor, and he just wanted to put an end to that. It was the Republican opponent, a fellow named, I think, John Savage out of South Fulton, who wanted to end to put an end to the lieutenant governorship.
That was one of the most interesting catfights in recent Georgia political history, Sam, because, you know, Lester Maddox had been the most controversial governor of Georgia in decades during that period of the 60s. And he came back. He couldn't run for governor. He came back and won the job of lieutenant governor and made life miserable for the governor in those days.
So I do think as they look to draft the proposed constitutional amendment, if the lieutenant governor really views his position as executive, it would be a good opportunity to put that language within the bill, because you can argue legally that the lieutenant governor is both executive and legislative. And I like the idea. I like the bill, but I think that language should be within it.
Yeah, because if he's part of the executive, then he's exposed to the State Open Records Act. As part of the legislature, he's not.
Oh, all right. Okay. Let's do this. Let's get our final break of the show out of the way and come back and pick up on a couple more issues that are pressing today. This is Political Rewind.
Did you know that pigs can be pessimistic and that chimps can be charming? I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, we dive into the world of animal emotions with primatologist Franz De Waal and talk about what blushing says about our evolutionary past. Yes, animals do have feelings. Like, you didn't know that, right? It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today at 3 on GPB. My name is Chuck Reese. I'm the editor of an online magazine called The Bitter Southerner, and I've seen decades of misconceptions about the South from the Beverly Hillbillies on down. In our podcast with GPB, we challenge those stereotypes and paint a very different picture of the American South. You can subscribe to the Bitter Southerner podcast for free at gpb.org/podcasts.
If you're listening in real time and you live in Gwinnett County, you now have about 3-4 hours to cast an early ballot as to whether MARTA ought to be expanded to Gwinnett, as to whether you ought to pay a new sales tax, penny sales tax to support that over the next, few decades, Jim Galloway?
Yeah, get in your car now, because I think you only got till 5 o'clock.
I think it's 5 o'clock, yeah. The actual vote is on Tuesday, March 19th. Sam Olens, Gwinnett's watching this obviously very closely, but up in your county, in Cobb, people are watching to look at what the appetite is for expanding transit. What do you think this vote's going to mean to people across Metro Atlanta beyond just Gwinnett itself?
If the vote passes in Gwinnett, it's going to put a lot of pressure on Cobb County. There still will not be an immediate vote in Cobb County, but it will put a lot of pressure. When Charlotte Nash says that there are a lot of companies that will not come to Gwinnett without transit, she is 100% accurate. That's exactly what former Governor Deal said, too. The economic development folks hear that on a regular basis. If it fails in Gwinnett, it just means it will probably be a 2-year delay.
Galloway, you've got a column that people can read online right now about all this, and you sort of take an optimistic viewpoint on this. The headline is, Gwinnett's MARTA vote isn't a matter of yes or no, but now or later. What does that mean to you?
Well, that means to me, that means if there's a look, this vote was kind of set up at a disadvantage. It was originally thought that it would be on the November 2018 ballot. It was moved to March 19th. It's kind of an orphan date, a low turnout date. Had it been voted on in November, well, Stacey Abrams took Gwinnett by 56%. But okay, if that's the case, Gwinnett is headed into Democratic territory. Demographics just say that. All right. So either there are two paths that might happen. You might have Charlotte Nash joining with the two Democrats on the board right now to set up a November 2020 date for yet another MARTA vote, or you wait until you have a fully Democratic-controlled Gwinnett County Commission.
So, Michael, how many years ago did DeKalb County approve MARTA?
47 years.
47 years ago. You all in your county have been waiting a long time for counties like Gwinnett to step up and become part of a larger system. I guess Galloway's right that another year and a half isn't a big deal, but at some point, it's got to either happen or it's not going to happen.
And I hope it does. And, you know, I have to acknowledge Charlotte Nash's effort to get this done. She's laid it on the line politically and otherwise, and I'm hoping that it will to our neighbors. But one of the things that we look at is the fact that it was a half a century ago, and I celebrate the mass transit pioneers in DeKalb and in Fulton who envisioned the future, who looked beyond the partisan politics, the race and class, and recognized what Mr. Olin just said. Without mass transit, you are at a disadvantage economically. But think that 50 years ago, people were able to see that, and we're still challenged in Gwinnett and Cobb and other metro areas about making that critical decision that is not just economic, but it's also a quality of life issue.
Sam, both you and Michael have, you know, complimented Charlotte Nash on the campaign she's tried to run here. But you also have pointed out she cut a good deal with MARTA, and it's questionable whether she'll ever get a deal or another commissioner chair up there might get the kind of deal that she's got right now.
Now, her negotiations with Robbie Ash were superb.
He's the chair of the MARTA board.
He was the chair. And Fulton and DeKalb have been pouting ever since they read the agreement.
Pouting?
Mr. CEO, pouting might be the most positive word I could use in this regard.
Mad as hell. How about that?
Okay, the number is here, Bill. Under the Gwinnett agreement, Gwinnett would pay MARTA 29% of all the revenue that comes from that penny sales tax for operations. Right now, Fulton County and Fulton, DeKalb, and Clayton pay 50%. Am I right, Michael?
That's real money.
Yeah.
Yes. Donna, and I say it with a grimace.
Meanwhile,
he's not pouting. He's grimacing.
At the same time that we're waiting to see what happens in Gwinnett, where it appears the margins can be very, very narrow one way or the other, the legislature is moving forward on establishing, I think, is that bill still moving?
Rural transit?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So rural transit is still moving. There's still some talk as to where some of the money is coming from. You know, the rideshare companies have been kind of in and out of that bill, actually. So trying to figure out how much might come from rideshare in mostly Metro Atlanta to help fund rural transit.
On Thursday, Senate Majority Leader Michael Dugan told one of our reporters that bill is going to have a little bit of a hard road to pass the Senate.
Okay, we'll watch that too. All right, we've got very little time left. Yesterday, the United States Senate voted on the president's emergency declaration. They voted on the resolution to basically nullify the emergency declaration on spending for border security. 12 Republicans in the Senate voted against the president. They voted for this resolution. Is anyone at this table, and we can dispose of this quickly, I imagine, because we don't have much time. No surprise that David Perdue voted for it. He's been sitting with the president. He's attached at the hip to the president on everything. Anybody at this table surprised Johnny Isaacson didn't join the opposition?
The Georgia delegation just got $130 million earmarked by the Corps of Engineers for the Port of Savannah. And it was a deal cut by Johnny Isaacson with Mick Mulvaney. It would have been very hard for Isaacson to side with the dissent on this one.
No, see it, right? That explains it.
You know, what's interesting is Charleston got $138 million towards their deepening, and I'm not sure the Atlanta paper covered that yet.
Ooh,
that's good. Well, we did good. Galloway's got the first item for the Insider.
Johnny Isaacson, the deal maker, right? That was the front page of the AJC. That was top of the fold.
All right. Well, I mentioned that because it's interesting that Isaacson voted with the president on that. We get the explanation from Jim Galloway. But I also mention it because Senator Johnny Isaacson will be here for Political Rewind next Wednesday at 2 o'clock. So I hope you're all here for that show. And by the way, speaking of U.S. senators, next Friday at 2 o'clock, Alabama Senator Doug Jones is going to be on the show. So we got a lot of U.S. Senate week next week on Political Rewind. Again, if you're listening in real time, have a great weekend. We'll see you again Monday at 2. And Jim Galloway will be back with me to take on the latest political news. Take care, everybody.